You're listening to Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.
You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Today's Thursday, so we're talking about coaching. So let me ask you this as we get started. You're walking on the beach, and you find that mystical jug washing up on the sand, and out pops the genie and says, I'm here to grant your two wishes. I'm going to make you perfectly successful, and I'm going to create perfect balance in your life. Do you want it? Well, can you answer that question? Or do you have more questions? We're going to get back to that in just a minute. But before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows. They air every Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. And all are brought to you live, guess where, right here on octalkradio.net. This is Talk Radio, so let me give you our call-in numbers. Love to hear from you today. 949-713-6443 or 949-713-6447. We're standing by, breathlessly waiting to hear from you. Well, I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice. I'm a master certified coach and a past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation. You know, on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays at 3 p.m., but Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 4, Thursdays at 3, Rick interviews leading CEOs from Orange County and from around the country. And let me just tell you, they are very interesting shows, and I encourage you to jump on the air early and be sure to catch those every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Well, here we are on the beach. The bottle washed up, the genie popped out and says he's going to give you success and perfect life balance. Do you take it? Or do you have a question? What do you mean, genie, by success? And what do you mean by perfect balance in my life? You know, this is the essence of a lot of our coaching of executives. How many of us have really defined what success really is? How many of us could really articulate that? Maybe we think it's clear in our head, but if we tried putting it on paper and letting people know what that would look like? Have we tried identifying what balance would look like? You know, I had a very, very pleasant surprise just recently in that I started to coach a new client. And prior to the first coaching session, he sent me an email. And attached to the email was a 9-page document. I hope you're hearing me okay. We're kind of going crazy here at the radio station. So attached to the email was a 9-page document listing where he is in his life, where he wants to go in his life, what success would look like, what balance would look like. You know, what his life would look like from all angles, and on top of all that, an analysis, a score box of where he wanted to be and where he thought he was today. Let me tell you, I was blown away. Here he was providing me with information that usually takes me many coaching sessions to pull out of clients. But this individual had clearly defined, or at least made a very, very good start at defining, what success really was to him and what life balance was between work and family and spiritual life and all the other elements that right down to the toys that he hopes to have someday. It was really refreshing. It was really gave us a great start on our coaching. And, you know, it tied in perfectly to an issue that's kind of been nagging at me since our radio show last week. You know, last week, if you were listening, we talked about calculating the return on investment in coaching. How do you figure out what that ROI is? And after we got through with the discussion, which I thought I had covered brilliantly, I got to thinking about the fact that how many of my clients can calculate their ROI? And why do I care about whether they can calculate the ROI? You know, shortly after that show, I had a prospective client that we had given a proposal to on coaching question to me and say, you know, that seems like a lot of money for what we're talking about. I'm going to have to think about that. And, of course, I put on my sales hat, not my coaching hat, and said, you know, when somebody tells you it seems like a lot of money, the issue usually is that you haven't really conveyed what the value proposition is to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't think it was a lot of money. So as I got to thinking about that, I thought, well, how could I convey the value proposition? So I sent that prospective client some information on coaching ROIs and how to calculate it and some case studies on it. And I thought, well, maybe I should have one of my clients call up this prospective client, and explain to them how masterful the coaching was that they received and why this prospective client should sign up for one of our executive coaching programs. You know, it was a little disturbing to me as I looked down the list of clients and saw, okay, who's gonna give me the best report, obviously. And, you know, it was no surprise. I could call any one of them and they'd all say nice things. But what surprised me was that I think they'd all say nice things, but I didn't know if any of them could truly quantify what they were really getting from the coaching. Could they really testify to the fact that X number of hours and dollars of coaching time generated X number of dollars of bottom line profit or reductions in expenses or increases in revenue to their businesses? And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, I am doing both them and I'm doing me as a coach a disservice. As a coach, it's to my advantage if my clients all know what their ROI is and can articulate it easily to other people, because that enhances referrals, gives me a great source of third-party testimonials. And from the client's perspective, it really reinforces their decision that, hey, this coaching commitment that I've made and been living with was a good decision, and it's truly valuable. And I realized that one of my objectives in coaching has really been to be somewhat invisible to my clients. And I mean this with all sincerity, that it's not the coach's idea, it's not the coach's role to make great breakthroughs in the coaching session and come up with great ideas and later on be able to look at the client and say, you know, the reason you've landed that new account, the reason you've retained that key executive that was getting ready to quit, the reason that you are having more productive meetings is because of the coaching that I gave you, because of what I said in the coaching meeting. That's certainly not my role. That's certainly not my objective. So to me, perfect coaching is when the client doesn't realize that anything ever came from the coaching session. It just all came from them organically. And they walk away from the coaching session, they go back into their business world, and they make better decisions. And that's really what we're all about here at Critical Mass, is giving you information, hoping and helping you to make better business decisions as a result of that. But are we doing you a disservice if you aren't able to articulate what that process that you're involved in was really worth to you? I think we are. And as I thought about it, I thought, you know, we don't really have a tool that's available for that. I can go back through my notes from when I'm coached, and I do that with my coach. I do it on an annual basis, at least at her insistence, and look at what we talked about over the year and remind myself of, boy, was that valuable. Gee, that was great. Oh, that's where I got that idea. Oh, yeah, I remember that now. But I don't do that much with my clients, and I don't push them on it, and most of them don't take really great notes from the sessions. So, of course, the alternative is, should I take great notes from the session and send it to them? Well, as a coach, that just increases my commitment and my time, and they become my notes and my interpretation. So it really is up to the client. So I started thinking of what would be a graphic example that would really make a whole lot of sense to clients. And I thought of a wheel with spokes in it, or if you want to think of it, I know it's close to dinner time, but as a piece of pie with a bunch of slices of the pie. And each slice of the pie would represent an area that we are coaching in. An area that in a corporate environment, one of the slices might be what I was called in by your boss to coach you on, and what we all three agreed would be a key topic of our coaching as we move forward. But of course, those other slices of the pie were left blank, and as our coaching got started, session by session, you, the client, added pieces of the pie. Oh, I was called in to help you do this, but guess what? I just had a situation come up and I need some coaching on this area, or I need some coaching in that area, or I need some help in relationships, or I need some help. I'm having trouble with myself, feeling a self-worth. I'm having trouble with my communication. All of these things become great coaching topics. And if you identify the pieces of the pie with each one of those topics as they come up, and you keep updating this in each coaching session, both the coach and the client, and you start to score how well you're doing in those areas, because many things aren't a one-session solution. So, you know, you can sort of shade in the pie. The closer you are to the center of the wheel, that might represent zero. The outside of the wheel might represent 100%. So where are we as we shade in that piece of the pie? Have we achieved 50% or 30% or 90%? And in this way, we now have a document that both from the client and the coach's perspective is kind of a reminder of what we've covered, what was left unsaid, what areas we need to do more work in, and where we're really going in tracking this ROI for our coaching. And it was, I'm sure, no coincidence that no sooner did I have this idea than I met with the individual I mentioned earlier, who had his own scorecard all filled out even prior to the coaching, saying, here's the areas that I know I need coaching in, and here's where I think I'm scoring. And boy, that was just a phenomenal, great start to a first session. And guess what? As a result of that first session, we're now looking at taking that scorecard image that he's created, and let's put some more blanks in there because, hey, we identified some other areas of coaching that that are needed or that were requested. So it all ties back to that ROI conversation we had last week. It all ties back to the idea of goal setting and clear objectives. It ties back to my walking on the beach example that if you haven't defined what success is, if you haven't defined what balance is, if you haven't defined what it is you want out of the coaching, you're never going to know whether you've achieved it. And if you know you've achieved it, then you can make some wild, well, we'll call it a swag, some wild guess as to what was that worth to me? And how does that compare to what I'm paying in terms of time and money for my coaching? And is this a good business decision? You do it with every other consultant you work with. Why wouldn't you do it with your coach? I'm not offended by it. I don't think any other coach would be offended by it. In fact, I would love it because I'm absolutely convinced that if we track this with any sort of regularity, that you're going to find that the value you're deriving is significantly more than you ever guessed you would get from the coaching. So that kind of brings us up to date on where we left off last week with some additional thoughts about both from a client perspective and a coaching perspective. Creating a graphic, do a wheel, identify the areas that you're being coached in and start to keep a scorecard on them, and maybe put some percentages of completion or satisfaction and maybe even some estimates of dollar value of what that was worth to you, and see if you can't get really comfortable with this coaching, and maybe that's going to fire you up to be even more aggressive in what you ask of your coach and what the coach has given to you. So before we branch into our next conversation, let me turn you over to our producer for a commercial.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, Under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Okay, we're back here again. This is Doug Gefeller. We're talking about coaching, and before we get back into it, let me just remind you some great books that you might want to put on your shelf. Hey, don't put them on your shelf. Read them. Maybe you don't put them on your shelf. Maybe you put them in your electronic file. So two new books in the Critical Mass series, both dealing with CEOs at this point. Rick is Rick Franzi, my business partner, is the author of the first book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. It's been called The Definitive Guide to the CEO Peer Group Experience. And it's available for sale on Amazon.com. Just type in under author Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. This is a great, easy read that gives you a quick perspective as to what is the value, what is a peer group, and what is the value of belonging to a peer group. Maybe you call them peer groups, maybe you call them forums. But, you know, basically it's what Rick and I have been doing for going on 18 years here in Orange County, building CEO peer groups for executives, all under the brand name Renaissance Executive Forums. We currently have multiple peer groups right here in Orange County. And if you'd like to learn more about our peer groups and our forums or even about our coaching practice, just check out our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. Or read Rick's book if you want to get the basic primer on what CEO peer groups are doing. The second book just released this last month is The Power of CEO Guiding Principles. It's a compilation of 62 interviews that we had that we picked out of about 250 interviews with Orange County's top CEOs and their response to the question of what is your guiding principle in running your business. Some great, thoughtful, and insightful answers to that question. And, you know, I'm an avid reader. I love to read success books about what made other people successful and what drove them, what was their passion, what was their motivation, what's their secret sauce to achieving what they wanted in life. And this is a great insight into that. So it's also available for Amazon. So The Power of CEO Guiding Principles. Our third book on coaching is going to be out this summer. Hey, we're almost to summer, so I better get busy on that. But it's coming along very nicely, and I think you're going to enjoy that too. So let's get back to our coaching. You know, I've talked a number of times before on this program about the fact that the name of our practice, The Coaching Perspective, is really the flag bearer or the standard for my reason for being in coaching or my motivation in coaching, which is to help you get a new perspective on what your issues are. From my experience both in coaching and in facilitating our peer groups, it becomes very obvious, became or has become very obvious to me that once you can look at a problem from a different point of view than the way you've been looking at it, the solutions become fairly obvious. You know, I forget who was that said it, but said that no problem is solved with the same thinking that created it. And I think that just is another way of expressing the same issue. So how do you look at things from a different perspective? Let's just take a couple minutes and focus on that. And it's a matter of noticing what's going on or becoming more aware of what's going on. And when I say what's going on, it's a matter of becoming more aware of others and what their reactions are to what's happening, becoming more aware of yourself and the impact that you are having on others, and becoming more aware of the group dynamics, which can be totally different from the way it impacted me and the way it impacted you. And now that it's out there in this group environment, it creates a whole different level of impact from a group perspective. So how do you do that, and what does that really mean? I mean, I think as a coach, you know, part of the language we use in coaching is mirroring, and many times we mirror or attempt to create a situation where the client sees what they're saying or what they're doing from our perspective. So we mirror back what they're doing. It's sort of like you tell me what happened, and when I repeat it to you in the exact same words, it sounds totally different to you. So that's what we want to do with mirroring, and it's all about noticing and becoming aware of what's going on. You know, I had a very interesting example of that in the last month. I was working with a client who had a issue with a individual, an employee, and was showing me a chain of emails that kind of delineated what the issue really was. And as this individual, I'm saying he or she, let's just make it easy so you don't get confused, as he was explaining this to me, he got more and more upset as he was reliving the event. And once that was all out on the table, you know, it took a little bit of work to get him to now look at it as if he was on the other end of that conversation. And from the other end of that conversation, how would he have reacted? How would the other person have reacted to that? You know, and that is really what the trick is in this, is how do we put ourselves in somebody else's shoes and understand how they are going to react to it? The other thing, too, in perspective is to get out of the perspective of either or. You know, I just can't even begin to count how many times I have been presented with issues that people were having, and the conversation ends up with, well, I could either do this or I could do that, as if there were only two choices in the world. And, you know, the thing I like to do is just tag the word and, A-N-D, onto the end of that either or. Well, you could do either this or you could do that, and what else could you do? You know, it's a matter of looking at other options. It's a matter of recognizing that you can choose to be boxed in. You can choose to be upset by something, or you can look at it a different way. It's all in your power to take and change that perspective of the way in which you're dealing with things. So, again, perspective, that's what it's all about in coaching. And, you know, I don't know how we get that without having a coach. I mean, and when I say having a coach, it's having someone that can listen to you and honestly play back what they hear you saying or what they see you doing. And the relationship is such that you don't get offended by it. You don't get defensive about it, but you're willing to accept it as honest feedback and reevaluate, well, if it looks that way to somebody else, even though I didn't mean it that way, how would that have colored the situation? How would that have caused people to react? And given that, would I look at solving this problem differently with that understanding? So that's one of the things that you want to do. You know, it ties into the area of great questioning. They say that the key to coaching is really all about questioning, and there is some wonderful material available. I mean, there's a number of books on how to ask good questions. There's, you know, all kinds of resources available to you. One of my favorites is The Choice Map. I'm trying to think of the book name. You know, you're going to have to look it up for a minute here. I can't think of it right now. But The Choice Map talks about the fact that as we go down the path of life, we have a choice as things happen to us, as we observe things, to take what you and I would call the high road or the low road, or what they would call the learner path or the judger path. And The judger path says, this happened to me. Why did it happen to me? What's wrong with them? What can I do to get even? Why can't I ever win? It is a matter of being defensive about what happened. The learner path takes and starts to ask questions about what happened from the perspective of, well, gee, if that's the way you took it, what was it that caused you to look at it that way? What could we have done differently? What could we do now to sort of change that? And that's what the learner path is all about. It's all about asking questions that really dig into the assumptions that people are making to find out why they're behaving that way or why they're reacting that way. The learner path is about choosing the way you deal with the environment, whereas the judger path is all about the fact that you are just reacting to the environment. You're just taking a very reactive mode, I want to say defensive mode, to really what is going on. So, you know, when we talk about perspective, we're talking about being aware of how we're impacting people. We're talking about developing a perspective that recognizes that we have options. And we're talking about a perspective that has us asking questions from a learner point of view, looking to engage people to get a better understanding of what they're doing and why they're doing it that way. You know, it was really rewarding to me to I was coaching a group of people this month, and one of the things that we did is we had a large number of people that were getting together from a number of different locations for the first time, and to sort of kick them off, we went through the DISC report and analyzed their communication styles. And those of you who've been through it know that everybody enjoys going through the DISC report, and it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of learning in it, and it typically isn't very painful. What was really encouraging was an email that I received just this morning from one of the individuals saying, okay, I understand what we went through. I understand what my profile is, and I understand that other people have different profiles, and I understand a little bit about their profiles. Can you help me now identify what do I need to do to create a better working relationship with people who have a different communication style than mine? Boy, what an enlightening type of question for an individual to ask. Not about, well, you know, I'm the boss and they need to modify their style to fit mine. It's all about recognizing, you know, what is going on and what is the impact that you're having on the environment. Coached an individual who was talking about some of her issues with employees and why they weren't more like this individual's management style. And what we finally recognized was, well, yeah, we could work some on changing the executive's management style, and maybe that's a good idea. But what if we were more conscious of the people we hired and what their management styles were like, and we selected people whose styles were more like ours and blended in better? What kind of an environment would that then create? And, you know, as soon as this idea got out on the table, this executive immediately started to identify individuals within her group that really had styles that matched hers or were more similar, more compatible with her style, and how easy it was to work with them. And then identified others that their styles were significantly different and some of the struggle that she had in working with them. So it's a matter of noticing and being aware. Now, is this a good or bad value judgment? Is it good to have people who are different on your team? It is. Is it good to have people who are similar to you, who have a lot of the same tendencies? That is good, too. It's all a matter of degree, and one of the things that came out of this coaching discussion was a greater awareness of in the hiring process, let's look very closely at what people's communication styles are and consider how easily or how well they're going to blend with those people we already have in the organization. So, again, perspective, it's all about noticing, about being aware of what's going on, about understanding the options, the choices that you have to make, getting out of that either-or kind of environment, about asking good questions from a learner perspective rather than a judger perspective. So let's just take a minute. We'll hear a commercial, and we'll be right back.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gefella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Doug Gefella, back at you with the coaching perspective for today. And let me just say that, as you just heard on that commercial, team coaching is one of the things we do. We work with executive teams, and I want to just say some really positive signs in the environment. I would say in the last 60 days, we've had more requests for proposals and more new engagements starting than we have seen in the last 2 years. So it looks like, as you've heard from some of the HR professionals we've had on the show here, it looks like companies are kind of turning loose some of their training and development money and recognizing that, they have weathered this recession by really being more selective about the number of people they have, about retaining their top people, about eliminating any excess manpower that may not be needed, and have found that increased productivity or fewer people really helps the bottom line results. And now they're starting to look at, okay, given that I've got fewer people and we're starting to pick up and do more work, how can we increase our productivity? And, you know, one of the easiest ways is with the existing people you've got. It's a lot cheaper solution than adding new people. And there are very few of us that are working at 100% of our capability. I'll personally testify to that. So a little bit of coaching that adds another 10, 15, maybe 20% productivity out of existing employees, huge impact. No additional space, no additional equipment required, no additional benefits required, and you're dealing with trained, experienced employees already that you know and that know you. What a win-win situation that is. Well, look, that kind of takes us into the third and last topic that I kind of wanted to talk about here today, and that is the fact that so much of our coaching is really with executives and with management teams. And as we talked about earlier today, we talked a little bit about communication and the importance of that. And one of the things that that really keeps coming up is time management, delegation, and management styles. You know, so much coaching revolves around those issues. Unfortunately, it starts out with the sort of request of, can you give me a quick list of tips? And this is followed with someone pulling out their pad and paper and pad and pencil and saying, okay, go ahead, Doug, give me the tips that are going to make me more effective in time management. Or, I'm not very good at delegating. Give me the three things I need to know to increase my delegation skills. I wish there was some easy answers to those questions. There just aren't. And typically, those questions are really just an opening in the door to look at many times deeper issues and more significant issues. People that are talking about time management, may have issues with lack of trust of people, unwillingness to delegate. They may have control issues of having to do everything themselves. They may have some ego issues of if it isn't done my way, it isn't right. And these are all things that can be coached and that we do coach in, and all things that all of us need a little tuning up on from time to time. You know, there is a sort of a common misconception in the business world that a good executive, as a good seasoned executive, has learned a management style that individual, he or she, then applies to their people, and that's what makes them successful. You know, my observation is that is so far from the truth that it's ridiculous. I would modify the statement slightly, but significantly. A good executive has developed a backpack of management styles that they can go to, a toolbox of management styles that they can go to and use when the situation calls for it. You know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything that you run into looks like a nail, and the hammer is the solution for it. What we really have, if you want to generalize it, is three basic styles of management that I see that I think help define almost all situations. Again, I wish I could remember where I read this, but it's kind of stuck with me. If you take a graph and along the horizontal axis, you measure how well you as a executive know this individual that you're delegating to or managing. And if you measure along the vertical axis, how well that individual knows or is familiar with the problem that you're giving them to work on, you then can start to plot them on the graph. And what happens is the closer they are to point zero, where you don't know them at all and they don't know the job at all, then you have to apply management style number one, which is managing as teacher. If they're sort of on the far end of the scale, the opposite extreme, that you know them well, and that they know the function or the task well, then you can use management style number three, which says you manage them by exception. And if they're someplace in the middle of those two lines, then you're talking about management by objectives. Now, the key point here is not so much my definitions. The key point here is recognizing that somebody that you work with all the time and that you know well, you do not manage them the same on every task that you give them. So, for instance, if you are managing me and you say, Doug, I want you to put together our strategic planning session, figure out when we're going to do it, figure out where we're going to do it, figure out what needs to be done ahead of time, who's going to be there. I want you to put the whole meeting together. And what I can tell you is I want to have the meeting in July at the end of the month. Now, if you are assigning that task to me and we've worked together a whole lot, you know that, hey, I'm fully qualified to do that, done it many, many times. You know that the task you're asking me to do, strategic planning, is something that I've done many times and I'm fully qualified to do. So what management style are you going to use with me? You're going to use management by exception. You know me well. I know the job well. You give me the job. You give me a due date and you go away and say, hey, if you have a problem, here's my phone number, call me. Otherwise, I'll see you the date of the strategic planning meeting. You are so comfortable with my knowledge of the task, and you're so comfortable with our experience working together, that you don't need to be involved in the process whatsoever at all. You just will show up, and you know that if Doug runs into a problem, he'll call you and let you know what the issue is. Unfortunately, most executives feel like that's the epitome, that's the holy grail of where we want to be in managing people. And they use that with everyone. Let's look at the other end of the scale for a minute. You don't, let's assume that you're still delegating to me and you know me real well and we've worked together. You just worked with me on this strategic planning issue and you handled that by managing by exception. But now you're having me do a task that I've never done before. You're telling me that you want me to do something that I have no experience in and haven't done it. Doug, I want you to put together a video production to show at the company meeting that showcases our human resource efforts in the last 12 months. Well, hey, that's a little bit outside my area of comfort. So how are you going to manage me when you give me that task? Are you going to just say, have it done by July and show up and present it at the meeting? No way. Are you going to identify, as you would in management by objectives, hey, let's have a monthly meeting between now and July and show me your progress points? No way. What you have to realize is this task you just assigned me, I don't know how to do it. So you're going to have to manage me as a teacher. You're going to have to teach me how to do it. You're going to have to teach me the process, not just manage the process. You're going to have to teach me the process. Teach me how to use the equipment to make a video production. Teach me what are the key elements of making of videos. What are the things you should be concerned about? Where do I go to get the people? Where do I go to get the story ideas? And in that teaching, you're going to have to stay very close to this task and to me all along the way, not just review points, but you're going to have to make sure that what you showed me how to do today, that you come back tomorrow and see, okay, you did it right, but I'm going to come back the next day and make sure you're still doing it right, haven't gotten off track a little bit. Now, in between those two extremes is the management by objectives, where I'm somewhat familiar with the task, you're somewhat familiar with me, and you say, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with what you're doing, but I don't want to wait till July to find out that it didn't work, so let's set up every Friday we're going to get together for 20 minutes and I want a progress report on how you're doing and some give me some example of what your output is so I can be comfortable that you're going in the right direction. These are three different management styles. In coaching, we talked earlier about awareness. And what you want to do is work with a client. And you as the client, you want to become aware of what style are you using. You know, when you tell me that the problem is the person working for you, many times I'm looking at the fact that the problem is the way you're working with the person working for you. The problem is that you haven't identified the right management style that would match up with that individual and that task involved. And this is all about awareness of yourself and how you're managing people. It's about awareness of the way in which people are reacting to it and what their capabilities really are. It's about having options, reaching in your toolbox and knowing that I've got at least three different size screwdrivers or management styles to use on this project with this particular individual. You know, I mentioned that. You might question, well, what is this? Sounds more like a training session on how to delegate or how to manage than it is on coaching. But I think it ties in to our coaching, because so much of the coaching that people either need or the coaching that we offer them has to do with getting them to be aware of these management styles and getting them to be aware of the impact it's having on people and how to go about selecting the right style for the right situation. So that's what we're really talking about there. I think it's well worth some time to think about. It might be worth doing a little bit of research on it. Again, it's today's topic's just kind of a conglomerate of issues that have come up in some of the recent coaching that I've been asked to do, and I think it's worth I enjoy the opportunity to share it with you. We hope to get back next week to having some of our HR professionals on the show and giving you a perspective of where they're going. Again, I can only say that we continue to see a increase in Orange County of the job offerings that are available for select, train, experienced people. And while there may be hundreds of resumes pouring in when these jobs are offered, what I'm getting back as feedback is there aren't a lot of qualified people out there ready to take them. So it's an issue to deal with. Well, look, as we start to wrap up here today, let me just mention that, you know, we like to coach executives. We like to work with individuals. Our definition of executives is people who manage. I don't care what level you're at, whether you're the owner of the company, the CEO of the company, the head of IT, or a first-time manager of a department. We love working with you, both in our group environments, in our peer groups, where we match you up with people of a similar experience, similar size companies, but in non-competitive environments, so that you can get the advantage of having that kind of advisory board and seeing how things are done in other industries with people that are facing generically the same problems as you, but in totally different environments. You may want to take advantage of our individual or group coaching, where we are working with you either in your environment on a one-on-one basis or with your management team to help you deal with those issues that will increase your productivity, improve your communication, and really drive real progress towards reaching your strategic objectives. In the coaching, one of the key things we like to do is make sure that all of our clients are really focused on the strategic issues and not bogged down in the tactical day-to-day tasks that we all have to do, that we all would like to assign to somebody else, but there isn't anybody else. So that's what we do here at the Coaching Perspective at Critical Mass. We work with individuals and we work with teams, and we'd like a chance to work with you. So what's your takeaway from today's session? Awareness. Being aware of yourself and your impact on others, being aware of the options, the choices that you can make, asking better questions from a learner perspective, understanding the different management styles that you have in your toolbox, whether it's as teacher, management by objectives, or management by exception. And, hey, don't forget that wheel graphic to work with your coach on, to or work with your clients either way, to really start to identify what are the areas we're working on and what is the progress we're making and what can I calculate as the ROI in those areas. So be sure to tune in next week. We look forward to hearing from you. Be sure to stay tuned to octalkradio.net for another great show. This is Doug Gefeller on behalf of myself and my business partner, Rick Franzi, hoping that all your decisions are better decisions, and that you're able to make more informed, better decisions as a result of our efforts with you. Thank you for joining us today.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective, only on octalkradio.net.